Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. We are thrilled today to let all of our online listeners know that KNSJ is back on the air at 89.1 FM after repairing major damage to the station's transmitter on Mount Laguna near Descanso. Here is a shout-out of thanks to KNSJ's hardworking crews and to everybody who donated funds to help put our community public interest radio station back on the air. Topping the news in East County this week, a Spring Valley mother is asking for help to find her missing 15-year-old daughter, who she fears may have been lured away by a stranger she met on PlayStation. Supervisors have approved some new water sources for East County to help firefighters just in time for peak fire season. Governor Newsom has signed a bill to help encourage building wildlife crossings over busy highways in our state. And in rural East County's Guate community, a mouse with potentially deadly hantavirus has been found. Learn what you should know about this on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with Graham Mitchell, El Cajon's city manager, who will be speaking out on the city's clashes with county officials over a motel voucher program for the homeless, the city's homeless programs, and other news out of El Cajon. Then on Destination East County, we'll have all the most haunting Halloween happenings coming up across our inland region in October, from pumpkin patches and corn mazes to a haunted train ride, a haunted amusement park, El Cajon's Haunt Fest on Main, many family fun activities, and a safe trick-or-treating option for children in La Mesa. We'll also have news on a bill signed by the governor that aims to increase college graduation rates in California, especially among low-income students. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
The family of 15-year-old Elena Mitchum, known as Gracie, is asking for public help to find her. She has been missing from her Spring Valley home since late at night on September 22nd. Gracie has green eyes and brown hair, but her hair was dyed a light green when she was last seen, according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children website. She is 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighs about 155 pounds. Her mother, Shannon Hoffman, told East County Magazine that the family believes Gracie was lured away by someone she met online via the PlayStation platform. She also took important documents, such as her Social Security card, when she left. She suspects someone enticed Gracie with a promise of a job since the family has struggled financially. "I've never wanted to ask for help, but I am desperate now," Hoffman says. If you have any information on Gracie or Elena Mitchum, please call 911 or call the San Diego County Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department number again is 858-565-5200. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
San Diego County supervisors have approved new water tanks and backcountry helicopter hydrants to give firefighting helicopters more water sources during wildland firefighting. East County's worst wildfires have occurred in late October, including the devastating Cedar Creek and Witch Creek firestorms, yet drought has drained some natural water sources. Aiming to prevent disasters, County Fire and CAL FIRE have developed a strategy to place HeLa hydrants and HeLa pods in a ring along the northern and eastern edges of San Diego County. The strategy identified locations in unincorporated areas that would benefit from additional water sources based on wildfire risk assessments and helicopter travel times. The goal is to give firefighters additional support to contain a fire early and avoid or lessen property damage and loss of life. HeLa hydrants are 5,000-gallon stationary water tanks connected to a municipal water source. A firefighting helicopter crew can siphon water to refill the aircraft's tank, allowing more frequent water drops in areas that don't have natural water sources. The HeLa hydrant will automatically refill so it's full for the next helicopter needing water. Last year, the region's first Gila hydrant site was established in North County by the Rainbow Municipal Water District through a partnership with CAL FIRE San Diego and North County Fire. This fall, County Fire will partner with the San Marcos Fire Department and Vallecitos Water District to install a Gila hydrant in San Marcos and at a new fire station planned in Jacumba in East County. County Fire and CAL FIRE are also placing large Gila pods around the county. Gila pods are portable 5,000-gallon pools of water that do need to be manually refilled by a water tender or from a municipal water source. Gila pods provide fire crews a water source to refill helicopter water tanks closer to a wildfire. A Gila pod is already in use at CAL FIRE stations in Julian and El Cajon. This fall, more Gila pods will be placed at the Rainbow Fire Center in Fallbrook and at the McCain Valley Fire Camp in Boulevard. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law on Friday to require Caltrans to integrate wildlife corridors into its plans as roads are built around the state. Collisions between drivers and wildlife are rampant, with 44,000 reported between 2016 and 2020, and likely many more that go unreported, causing injuries, deaths, and property damage. Mari Galloway with Wildlands Network in Sacramento says animals need to be able to migrate freely.
Especially mountain lions in Southern California, their inability to move is causing genetic abnormalities and potential local extinctions. But also in Eastern California, we have mule deer corridors, which are being severed by some of the major highways through there.
Wildlife crossings allow animals to search farther afield for mates, which research says supports genetic diversity. Galloway adds the endangered desert tortoise and the California tiger salamander in particular should also now have a much better chance to survive and thrive. Kim Delfino with the group Earth Advocacy in Sacramento says Assembly Bill 2344 guarantees that Caltrans will now make wildlife corridors a priority.
They're going to be planning for it. They're going to be incorporating it into their projects. They're going to be upgrading their highway design manual, and they're going to be identifying areas across the state that are connectivity hotspots that need to be addressed.
Seven mountain lions have been found dead on or near the highways of Southern California this year. Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trusts. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A deer mouse in Guate near Pine Valley has tested positive for the potentially deadly hantavirus. Finding hantavirus in wild rodents is common in San Diego County. However, people rarely come into contact with hantavirus, which has no vaccine or cure, because wild rodents naturally want to avoid people. But rodents in homes, barns, or sheds can leave droppings that can spread hantavirus. County officials are reminding people to never sweep up or vacuum up after wild rodents if they find them in living spaces, including homes, sheds, garages, and cabins. Instead, if people find wild rodents, nests, or signs of them in their living spaces and must clean, they should always use wet cleaning methods, using bleach or other disinfectants, rubber gloves, and bags. They should not sweep or vacuum, which could stir hantavirus into the air where it could be inhaled. After cleaning, be sure to seal up external holes to keep rodents out. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interest, not special interest. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Graham Mitchell, El Cajon's city manager. He's the man behind the curtain who keeps everything running smoothly out there in the city and on occasion steps in to troubleshoot when concerns arise. And we're going to be talking about one of those issues today. Graham, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been too long, I think, with the pandemic. Haven't, you know, been out there in City Hall much lately.
I know. We miss you.
Well, I'll have to come back. So anyway, the city of El Cajon and the county have become embroiled in this disagreement over how to handle the homelessness situation, which, I mean, everyone agrees it's a big problem in El Cajon, as it is across much of the region. But recently, you found out that the county was putting a lot of homeless people into 8 motels in El Cajon through a voucher program. Graham, can you start by telling us how you found out about that and what happened when you went to check it out in person?
Certainly. We've always known that the county ran a voucher program just because of the media. It's in the newspaper. County's never approached us. County elected officials or staff have never approached us and given us details about that. So we're learning through, like we do with most things from the county, from a press release. So one of the things that we started noticing around a couple of the motels is a spike in crime. And our drug detectives or our narcotics detectives started noticing people that they've never seen before. And we started making contact, and they were drug dealers, and they were drug dealers from outside the area that were sort of coming into El Cajon. And we noticed that they were preying on those that were staying at this motel. And so it made us start thinking, well, what's going on that we don't know? And so we started digging a little deeper. And we actually had our police officers go out and talk to all of the every single motel in the entire city and hotel, the front counter, and just asked how many people are here on vouchers. And we found out that 158 folks were on vouchers through the county of San Diego. That's a lot of people.
It is a lot. And I think especially troubling is the increase in the crime and the drug dealers, that you've mentioned. You yourself went out to check this out, I understand, and had kind of a disturbing encounter with a drug user and apparently a dealer out there. Tell us about that.
So I went out to one of the sites just to see what was going on. I asked some people to clean up some trash, and there was a gentleman that had a rolled up dollar bill and was about to snort some sort of narcotic. I asked him not to, and he acquiesced, and he went away. But I noticed out of the corner of my eye, another man sort of slumped over, trying to stand up. It was obvious he was on fentanyl or some sort of drug that was really doing a doozy on him. And
Medical distress,
almost in and out of consciousness. And so I was trying to make verbal contact with this man to see, does he need help, and try to ascertain, do I need to call 911 to see if the paramedics need to come out and administer Narcan to him? And I noticed while I was having this attempting to have this conversation with this man, there was a guy on a bicycle sort of riding around us. And he eventually said, "Hey, I got it." Meaning he probably had the Narcan.
Yeah. And I want to caution, by the way, that we're on radio, so I know what he said to you, but we can, not use the particular word.
I won't use that language.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as he circled me, I said, "I got to call 911 because it was becoming apparent that he needed assistance.
Yes.
And at that point, I was told to leave the premises using
profanity.
Yeah. And I was escorted back to my car, and I drove away.
Wow. Very frightening.
Very frightening. And then I noticed, what I noticed then, Miriam, is almost at the corner of that motel across the street, there were people set up, and they were literally set up waiting for people to wake up to sell drugs to that were in the motel. And that's our concern, is that if you're going to turn a motel into a homeless shelter, it should act like a homeless shelter. Right. So ECTLC, for example, Perimeter.
East County Transitional Living Center, for people that don't know the acronym.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You and I can't just walk in. We have to show ID. We have to have a purpose to be there.
Yeah.
They have security there. Right. And there's a protection for those that are being housed there. They're safe. The people that are being housed by the county through vouchers are not safe.
Wow, that's really disturbing.
They're left to their own devices. So that was our concern. And that's what sort of prompted the need for us to take some action to protect our own community.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. Since I don't have the county, have a spokesperson here today, I just want to explain for those that aren't familiar how the voucher program is supposed to work. In theory, they place people here who are homeless, get them at least off the street into a motel room for, I believe it's 28 days. And then they can transfer them to another hotel for another 28 days. According to the county, about 30% of these people were then transitioned into permanent housing or long-term housing. So I guess they've had some success with it. But obviously, there's some problems that it's causing, not only for the city, but as you've noted, for the safety of the homeless folks themselves. You also have found a problem, I understand, with smoke detectors that some of them had tampered with.
So as part of our, we have a regular inspection program of motels, and we were going to be inspecting Travelodge. So I actually asked a company just to see what the experience was. Yeah. And that day we went out there, 60% of the hotels or the motel rooms were either missing a detector or had the batteries removed, in part because there's a lot going on in those rooms. We found propane gas stoves.
Oh, gosh.
A lot of smoking that was occurring. And to the credit of the motel manager and the Travelodge did a great job. They had a large box of smoke detectors. And as a fire inspector went and identified that detector doesn't work, it was quickly replaced. So
good.
Everyone is put into safety. Again, this is now an economic burden on the city to ensure that the county's program is offering a safe place for.
Right. And it could have been even worse. What if somebody fell asleep smoking or something and started a fire and then there's no smoke, there's no smoke detector. Somebody could die of smoke inhalation or fire. How many homeless people now does El Cajon have? I know it went up a lot from the start of the pandemic to now.
So, well, first of all, you'll hear a county supervisor talk about this spike, 68% spike in homeless population.
Which is based on the point in time count, I believe, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. What's interesting, those aren't people on the streets. Those are actually people that are sheltered.
Oh,
and if you look at the number of shelter beds that we believe we have, 362, and there's over 600 sheltered homeless, that means either the point in time count's wrong or the county infused another 300 people into our community. So
do they count somebody who's in a motel?
They do.
Housed.
They do. So it's this circular, it's almost a circular argument where the county's saying, well, you have so many more homeless. Well, no, duh. You put a whole bunch of homeless in our community. So this is circular reasoning.
Let's talk about that, because I know one of the things that the mayor has voiced frustration with, and you too, I believe, is that at least some of these homeless people in the motels have come from outside El Cajon. We're not sure exactly how many, and I know you're trying to find that out. The county has basically admitted that at least, I think it's 37% of them or 35%, something like that, are not from El Cajon at all. They're from other parts of the county, mostly East County, but not El Cajon. Of the 63% or so that are from El Cajon, we don't know how many are the unincorporated area, which technically is county land, versus how much is actually people who were, picked up off the streets in the city of El Cajon and are homeless. So, Graham, I know you sent a public records request to the county trying to find that out, among other things. Have you had any response yet to that?
I haven't. And I wouldn't call it a public records request at this point. I have a good relationship with county staff.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping that they'll act in good faith and provide the information that we've asked for. I think it's a little irresponsible for the county to put out a press release saying 63% are from El Cajon. And then there's like this little asterisk, including unincorporated El Cajon. It's like one of those ads for a medicine that you see.
Yeah, it could be like Crest, right? Or something that's just like unincorporated area that's nowhere close to the city of El Cajon.
That's right. We don't know if that means there's of the 63, that's almost all of them, or it's three of them. We don't know that.
Right.
And that's a reasonable question to ask of the county of San Diego. And it's a reasonable thing to expect.
Devil's advocate question. If they only limited this to people who'd been picked up on the streets of El Cajon to say, we're going to temporarily get them off the streets and stick them in this motel, would it be as big of a concern for the city? Obviously, there's still the issue of the crime, you know, the drug stuff. In other words, if they said we wanted the city to do its fair share and let us have some motel rooms, but only for the people that are from El Cajon, would the city be, you know, sort of okay with that? Or is the big issue that, you know, the mayor has kind of accused the county of dumping people here, homeless people who aren't here, when El Cajon already has the highest homeless population of any city in the county other than the city of San Diego. And here you're bringing more of them in, including not just the folks that are down on the luck, but people, it sounds like at least some of them are, you know, drug offenders.
Sure. It would depend. I think we'd have to look at the numbers. That would be one concern. And I think the other concern we have is the county's contractor literally turning entire motels into shelters. When 100% of the rooms are occupied by vouchers, in my mind, it's no longer a motel.
Now, the city is actually sending out letters saying they're going to find some of these motels that are over the limit. I believe there's a limit of how many rooms they can use. You're not saying none. But if it's over a certain percentage, what is it, 25%? Am I remembering right?
We sent out a notice of violation of zoning violation to seven motel owners. So I'll be having a meeting with them. Mm-hmm. I've invited the county. They've offered not to come or declined the invitation.
Gosh.
It seems like they could be a good partner. They keep talking about wanting to be a partner and collaborative, but they're not going
to. But they're not showing up and talking to you guys. That has to be very frustrating. And we should say, I mean, you know, the press release the county put out the other day, you know, in response to the city's, I think, legitimate concerns, it was bipartisan. This was both Supervisor Joel Anderson and Supervisor Nathan Fletcher, you know, basically accusing the city of, I think in Fletcher's words, trying to push homeless people back on the streets. And the other issue was, I guess, not just the voucher program itself, but the city had suggested that if they're going to do this, maybe the county should at least provide some security, you know, some help with policing. I know you guys are short on police already. You've got a bond measure going on the ballot to try to hire more police. And the county sort of blew that off. I think their exact quote was, that, you know, if the voucher program no longer aligns with the city's commitment to addressing the issue of homelessness from a regional approach, we have full confidence in their ability to find solutions and in their police department to ensure the residents of El Cajon are safe. Graham, what's your response to that?
Well, we're doing that, actually. We're going to send out a press release. You'll get it later today.
Okay.
Highlighting four pretty significant arrests we've had recently, all individuals participating in the voucher program. One individual we arrested three times,
And
he continued to remain in the voucher program, selling drugs to fellow homeless individuals in the voucher program.
I saw that one of your questions to the county was, if somebody's been arrested for drugs and let out while they're awaiting trial or whatever, can they go back in the voucher program? Have you gotten an answer to that one yet?
I have not.
Interesting.
The other thing is we started a pretty... I don't want to use the word. I'll use the word heavy enforcement today. Actually, started today. We've made three or four, actually, I believe up to six arrests today, just today.
And we should say today, we're recording this on Tuesday the 20th.
Yes, Tuesday the 20th. We made six arrests, and we're planning on doing some continued enforcement later today. And then we'll be out every day this week doing some heavy enforcement, and we'll see what we can do. So the county asked us to respond, and so we're responding to that.
There you go.
The other thing that is a little shocking to me, and this is, and you've seen the comments made by the county, and primarily by two supervisors,
right?
It's so odd to me at how personal this has become to them. To me, this is just a policy issue, and it's either the county didn't know that their contractor was doing this, and so they feel awkward because they didn't know what was happening.
You know, that could be. Maybe they're just sort of embarrassed, and instead of saying, gosh, what can we do to fix this, it's just kind of a knee-jerk reaction to, you know, sort of deny it or
correct,
you know, put the blame on somebody else.
Or they knew what was happening the whole time, right? And then that's, I don't know that. So I mean, if you look at the number of participating motels in El Cajon. And you just do, I won't bore you with the details of the math, right? But if you just do it on a per capita basis compared to San Diego's massive two motels.
Oh yeah, it's eight and nobody else has eight. Nobody else
That's
has
right.
eight. Yeah.
You could say that we have 5,000% more than the city of San Diego. Now, for a county that talks about equity, which I believe in, by the way, and it's important.
It is.
You would think the county would try just a little bit harder. And that's all we're asking is just try harder to be more equitable to the jurisdictions that you represent.
Yeah. I want to give you a chance, Graham, for those that may not be, you know, that familiar with what El Cajon has done to help the homeless. I think if one was only listening to the county press release or what it said, you might be thinking that El Cajon is sort of hard-hearted toward the homeless and hasn't done much. But I know that that's not really true.
Yeah.
While one could always argue that there's something more that could be done, tell us about some of the programs that you have supported as a city.
Yeah. Well, let me start with the data first.
Okay.
We, since 2020, the beginning of 2020, we have placed 816 individuals into permanent housing. We helped them find permanent housing. I do not think there's a city, maybe besides San Diego, that even comes close to that.
That's permanent housing. We're not talking just a shelter. We're talking permanent housing, over 800 since the pandemic started. That's
correct. And not through any county voucher programs, just our own programming. Mm-hmm. We've helped to provide temporary short-term housing for over 2,400 individuals, 2,400 individuals. I don't know if you can find another city that has done that level of work.
Right. And you have the East County Transitional Living Center,
yes,
which the city supports financially, at least the short-term part of its program. I think there's a long-term one that's religious, which obviously you can't support.
Right.
The short-term part that at least gets people off the street and they have to be clean and sober to go into that one, as I understand.
That's right. We have a contract with Home Start where we help, and we have a housing navigator. We help connect people with permanent housing.
What does Home Start do exactly?
So they find individuals on the street. They do street outreach.
Mm-hmm.
They identify individuals that are ready to get off the street. And there's some, I mean, just, it's on, let's be honest, there are some people that are not ready to be off the street, unfortunately.
Correct. Yeah.
But they find those that are ready to get off the street and they work with them. They provide some case management. If there's some job assistance that's needed, if there's some sobriety issues, they'll work with them on that. They get them into temporary housing, usually through voucher program. So we mm-hmm. use vouchers as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing heavy case management with them. We then find housing for them.
I have a question. When you do the vouchers, is it different than the way the county does it? In other words, is it going into just something where nobody's really watching what's going on? Or is it something where there is some security, making sure there aren't drug dealers hanging around?
It's very different. It's heavy case management where they're actually in a program. They're just not getting off the street for 28 days. There's a goal in end, a goal in sight. And we don't put them all in one motel. We disperse them. We have eight people right now, or eight vouchers being used, eight motel rooms being used around the city. And there are, mm-hmm. and they're spread throughout the city. So we spread that out. So there's not one impact from one community. So then once they find housing, the city actually helps provide either some deposit assistance or assistance with first month's rent. And so we provide some rental assistance to get people into their housing to get that kickstart. So
nice.
That's one program. The other program is actually a countywide program, but it started here in El Cajon with mm-hmm. the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
We piloted it. No one else wanted to touch it. We said it's a wonderful idea, but it's helping people get back to their families.
Yeah, I understand. That's the one where if their family is, say, out of town, out of state, and they just can't afford the bus fare back.
Yeah.
My understanding is you don't just stick them on a bus, that you and the Salvation Army team up to make sure the family really wants them back, to have someone meet them there, maybe if there's a bus stop along the way, especially if somebody's maybe, you know, mentally not all there, to be sure that you know, they don't get lost and not make it there. And then is there follow-up after some period to see how it's going with the
there,
with the
there is under our contract, they have to do follow-up periodically. It's been very successful. We actually Salvation Army does counseling with the family members, because usually someone left, there was some rift. So there's some counseling to kind of build some bridges. We help pay for when they get back a bed and some clothes, so they have sort of their setup. They're not just sleeping on a couch.
Mm-hmm.
So we help them feel more at home. It is a way back home. So we've housed through those programs and ECTLC and Home Start that 816 individuals. And this is where, I guess where I'm confused, Miriam, is I would think the County of San Diego would be looking at El Cajon and saying, I wish more cities could do what they're doing.
Yeah, there's some things there that could be modeled, at least some parts of it that could be maybe emulated somewhere else, right. I think.
When there are larger cities in El Cajon that do not have shelters,
yeah,
it baffles me that we've become sort of this target when I feel like we're doing so much.
Now, you also have a small homes program, a tiny homes program that just started for women.
We just opened up the emergency cabins at Meridian Baptist Church.
Sleeping cabins.
Sleeping cabins. It's targeting for mothers and children. And it's just a great program. It's a model. We hope every city can take advantage of it. We've created the model for this to happen. So,
yeah. One of the things I think is really cool is the thought that's been given to homeless people who have dogs. You guys figured out that some of them weren't getting in for the services or medical services or, applying for food stamps, whatever they might be eligible to do, because they didn't want to lose their dogs and they're not allowed to bring them in these places. So yeah. Tell us about how you solve that problem.
Well, actually, we didn't really solve it. We are hoping to. There's actually some state law that prohibits. I'll tell you what the program intended to do. We intended to have a dog owner allow us to sort of watch their dog for a period of time while they go
got the shelter there. Yeah. The animal shelter.
That's correct. State law requires somebody to turn a dog into an animal shelter that they actually have to relinquish.
Oh, my. You're kidding.
So we have no control over that. In order for us to touch that dog, it has to be relinquished. And even if we promise that we're not going to give it away or adopt it out, If you love a pet, you're more likely not going to relinquish your pet to a
dog. No, you're not. Have you talked to any of the state legislators up there about just getting that law changed? It seems like maybe it would be something someone could put through. And
It's a really good idea.
Get an exception in there for homeless folks, perhaps.
You know? I think it's a fantastic idea.
Who just has to go in the hospital for surgery, maybe? And, I would think there'd be all kinds of other options, perhaps.
Especially if it's the love of their pet that's keeping them from saving their lives. That's a bad law, right? So I would agree.
Well, that's interesting. Next time I chat with one of our legislators, I'll put a bug in their ear about
Please that. Do. I'll do the same.
Yeah, there you go. On a related note, now last spring, I think it was, the four cities in East County, Lemon Grove, La Mesa, Santee, and El Cajon, signed a memorandum of understanding with the county that was aimed at helping to reduce homelessness by, working together in some fashion. Supervisor Anderson recently sent out a reminder letter that there's about $5 million in a capital emergency housing solutions grant program still there, not claimed. And so far, at least El Cajon has not applied. I'm not sure if the other East County cities have. So could you explain why not? What's wrong with the program? Or maybe you are going to apply and just haven't, but what are the reasons why the city hasn't applied for the money?
So actually only three cities in the entire county have applied for the money. And two of them, San Diego and Vista, it's for safe parking programs. Really only one city is using it for legitimate shelter. Oceanside is building 50 shelter beds with about $3.3 million and some other federal monies.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I guess in the county's defense, I know everybody had been on the county's case forever under the prior board about how come we don't have a homeless shelter anywhere in East County.
Yeah.
So the county's and they've tried, to get them a couple places and citizens would object. We don't want a homeless shelter in our neighborhood. Then they said, OK, let's put some grant money out there. So cities that have been saying they can't afford it, especially little cities like maybe Lemon Grove, La Mesa, we'll help you. We'll pay for it if you build it, for your homeless folks. So
Miriam, here's the rub.
Yeah.
And I call it the sacramentification of our county.
Okay.
There was a time when the county would reach out to the cities and say, we have a pot of money. Mm-hmm. We want to help you build shelters. How could you best utilize these funds?
That would make sense.
And then the cities could say, oh, we really need help with capital or land purchase or operations or a myriad of things,
staffing,
right?
Or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not how the county works. The county says, here's our money. Here's all the strings attached. Take it or leave it. There's no negotiation. And then we get mad at you if you don't apply.
So what are the strings that are of concern?
So security, 3 meals a day, washer, dryer, some of those things. So those are some concerns that some cities have. Like, I don't know if that's feasible for some cities. And so I think that is a concern for some, that it's just not feasible. The other is just timing. It, by the way, it takes a long time to acquire land,
right,
or acquire a motel. And it's almost like they throw this money and say, get it. And there's no time to do it. And I think it goes back again, just the collaborative approach. There used to be a time when we would sit down and figure it out, but now it's, again, we know better. We're so much smarter than you dumb cities. Take our money. And if you don't, we're going to beat it over. You're going to beat that over your head. So
my question then, Graham, would be, what help does El Cajon need? If the county were to come to you and say, yeah, you know, we want to help you with your homeless problem out there, what do you need? What can we do?
Yeah.
What would the answer be?
Well, I think there's two answers. One is, if we were to build another shelter, it would be with long-term operations. That's a real cost. Isn't the capital construction. Mm-hmm. That's a one-time thing. But the other thing is, we already believe we have more shelter beds per capita than anyone in the county. In fact, 50% more than the city of San Diego. So mm-hmm. we actually would like to see the county use their own money to build shelters where it's needed in Lakeside and Spring Valley, because we know there's a need in both of those locations. So
right, there is.
What prohibits them? So the better question is, county, why aren't you using this money to build shelters in your jurisdictions, right? So I think that's a better question. The other thing I wanted to remind, you mentioned, and the way you said it was that the four cities signed an MOU with the County of San Diego. That's actually not a true characterization.
Okay, that was what was in the county release. So if that's not accurate, then...
That's not accurate. And I don't know if the supervisor was either been misinformed or is participating in revisionist history. But the reality is, the cities, the four cities managers got together and actually had an MOU in the can ready to go. We were ready to present it to our councils.
Okay.
And then we started having a discussion with county staff about maybe there's some value of them being involved. And so the county, we worked with the county for not quite a year, at least 6 to 9 months, renegotiating some of the words. It got done. The county slapped their logo on the corner and then called it their MOU. It's actually, to be honest with you, it's the city's MOU, and we let the county sign onto it. It's not the other way around. So
interesting.
I'd like to remind the county that they get to participate with us.
Yeah, credit where credit's due there.
And this gets back to that sacramentification of San Diego. It's like, you know, we're so much smarter than you all.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you see as the answer. I mean, I know you've done a pretty good job of getting the folks off the street that want help, the ones that are clean and sober or willing to become so. But what is the answer for the ones that don't, the ones that are either mentally ill? I know the governor is working on a care court program, or the ones that are, you know, drug addicted. And I certainly don't want to imply that all or even majority of homeless people fall into those categories. A lot of them do not.
Yeah.
But I know I've heard folks in El Cajon tell me that what you're left with is a lot of the sort of hardcore homeless on the streets that are the ones causing, that won't go into shelters that are available, but that are, you know, causing these problems for the city. What more can or should be done to address those folks?
Well, I think first it's understanding why we've had this huge spike in homelessness over the last few years. And it happens to coincide with COVID. It has nothing to do with people being sick or has anything to do with people losing jobs. It actually has to do with our criminal justice system. So at any given time, Miriam, you have to recognize that a large percentage of the homeless population is incarcerated. They're either in county jails or some sort of state penitentiary. So for years, decades, the state's homeless solution has been jails.
Yeah.
And I'll make the argument that a prison system probably is a really expensive way to house the homeless, and it is not a good long-term approach.
Yeah, it's certainly not a humane one, especially for the ones that haven't broken any law other than just vagrancy, I suppose.
Correct.
Or, you know, peeing in a public park or something.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, for the folks that are like homeless drug dealers or something, that might be.
Well, let me go back to the, let me circle back. Mm-hmm. So although that's not a great model.
Right.
The state just said, and the county of San Diego said, well, we're going to start pushing people out of penitentiaries. We're going to reduce the penalties for crime, and we're not going to accept people. We're not going to book people into county jails unless they've committed a serious crime.
So right? Maybe it's the same number of troubled people or close to it. It's just that they're out on the streets now instead exactly right. in the jail. So it's more visible. We're seeing it now.
That's exactly right. Now, is it better for them to be in jail? No, I'm going to say no, it isn't. But you can't just change that policy and then expect the problem to go away, right?
Right.
So there's been no, the voters, you know, passed Prop 47 and Prop 57, which decriminalized a lot of crime, and there's ramifications to that, but yeah. No one worked on, well, how are we going to address that? So,
right. So
although the county may be saving money on housing people in county jail, the cities are now suffering with the costs or the burden of those folks now being on their streets. So I think that's an important component that we have to recognize, but yes. The other has to do with drug use and mental illness. And you said it, Miriam, not everyone has a drug problem, but and not everyone has mental illness. But when I see a guy outside my office, I'm fortunate to have these big, beautiful windows in my office. There's a gentleman that will periodically come out and he'll strip completely naked. Mm-hmm. And where there's once a fountain, which we no longer have water in the fountain because of droughts, he thinks he's bathing in our fountain.
Oh gosh.
He will be scrubbing his armpits and rinsing himself.
Oh my gosh.
And then he puts his clothes back on and I watch him walk away and I think that is not humane. I mean,
no.
That's a horrible condition for him to be in. But as a city manager, I have no ability to help him.
Yeah.
Because he won't respond to our assistance. So I don't know what the solution is, Miriam, and it's not at the city level. It's got to be a solution at the state level.
I think so. Do you think the care court is going to help? I guess that doesn't roll out for a year, October of next year. But for those not familiar, the governor just signed it. It had very strong bipartisan support. I think it only had a couple of no votes in the legislature. And it basically, well, let's back up. I mean, years ago when Reagan was the governor, they basically got rid of the mental hospitals, pretty much let everybody out. And that's when some of this started. And now realizing that went too far one way, now they're setting up care courts where there will be a way to force someone into institutionalized care for some period of time. But there are safeguards that didn't used to be there. So you can't just have somebody decide they're going to lock somebody up because they don't like them and throw away the key. It would periodically come before the judge and the person would have an opportunity to say, you know, I'm better. I should be back. I should be allowed to go out. But say the schizophrenic who's just off their meds and doesn't realize that they need to be on meds. Yeah. This might be a solution for folks like that.
Yeah, we were the first city in the county to endorse the plan. Mm-hmm. As you know, I have a very conservative city council in El Cajon. Yes. And they lauded the governor. In fact, Mayor Wells and I were invited to a meeting with the governor and the mayors of the 10 big cities mm-hmm. in the state because of that. And we think it's a tool. I mean, it's clearly not the end game solution, but I think it's an important tool.
And I think voters like it when they see people working together for the public good, regardless of whether an idea comes from the left or the right. You may disagree with everything else that person or that party does, but if they've got the right idea to solve a real world problem like that, you know, people, they want to see people working together and not just saying, oh, the other side came up with it, so it must be a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree, Miriam. And that's, I think most people are, maybe, I don't know if the word disgusted is right. Mm-hmm. I don't think they like this banter that's going back and forth between the county and the city. And I think you've noticed we've been very careful not to personalize it.
Mm-hmm.
We've been very careful to focus on policy.
And I will say, I know that the county, I know the supervisors care about getting help for the homeless. I will say, I think their heart is in the right place in wanting to do something. Their constituents are all, they ran on, we got to do something about the homeless issue, but they've been floundering a little bit. I think, you know, like you say, the devil is in the details. And sometimes what may sound like a good idea turns out to have some unintended consequences that just haven't been dealt with yet.
Yeah. But we're trying to keep it professional. I mean, as a city manager, I can't get involved in politics.
Right. And,
you know, there's been some swipes at me and in my ability to run the city of El Cajon. I think one press release referred to the city as a poorly run city. That hurts a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I pride myself on being professional, and I hope most recognize we're one of the best run cities in the county. Because we work really hard at it. And so I take that personal, but I can't push back because it's not my place to do so. So I hope the residents of El Cajon will recognize we're fighting for them, but we're also trying to focus on the solutions, not having a tit for tat with the county of San Diego.
Right. Name calling, that sort of thing. It polarizes and it only makes things worse. So sometimes it's somebody has to be the adult in the room and say, you know, let's just sit down and we're ready to work it out.
Yeah.
I think you've answered all my questions on the homeless issue, Graham, but I want to just leave the open-ended question of what else is happening in El Cajon that you would like your residents to know about.
There's a lot. I mean, we have a lot of development happening right now. We just adopted an economic development strategic plan. So we're working with the mall properties to try to figure out a long-term solution for the mall.
Oh, yeah. What's going to happen with Parkway Plaza? People ask me that all the time.
You know, Miriam, it's such a the challenge is this. I don't think most people realize it, but the mall is actually owned by 5 independent owners.
Oh, wow.
So getting them all together has been a challenge.
It's like herding cats.
So we're working on that. I think it has so much potential. It has so much capacity. So we want to help on that process. That's one of the big goals that we're working on. As you saw, and by the way, I can't advocate for a sales tax measure, but I can talk about it. The city council just placed Measure P on the city on the November election.
Right. I should note, I believe the vote was unanimous. And these are 5, you know, generally conservative Republicans, generally anti-tax, but saying we need a 0.5-cent sales tax increase, you know, because of the issues with homelessness and crime, basically, are the 2 issues they're looking to address predominantly with that. Am I right? Or is there anything else that money could be used for?
Those, and also just increasing some of our fire capacity. Fire and rescue. You know, I think we have access to the polling data that was provided to us. And what's interesting to me, and this is kind of my big takeaway, is I think El Cajon residents appreciate the work that we've done, but recognize we need to take it to the next level.
Right.
I think they recognize that we don't have magic wands either. And that takes some investment, right? It takes money to make money. Well, it takes money to make improvements. And I think if we make the right strategic improvements, it'll actually develop some more sustainability. So the tax base can increase,
mm-hmm.
and that sales tax can be lowered. And one of the things that we instituted, I think it's the first in the county, is the council actually has the ability to lower the sales tax. That's unheard of. And so—
So if you decide you don't need it in the future, there's some huge surplus
that
comes in from something else. Maybe voters—
Or we grow the economy somehow with these, we use this money strategically to grow the economy.
Yeah.
Then it allows us to perpetually generate revenue that will then allow us to lower the sales tax. So
interesting.
Kind of fun.
Very interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And you've got everything going on with the theater there now back
the
open.
Theater's booming. We have some big shows coming up, actually. Belinda Carlisle from the Go-Go's is coming. And I know these are bands that are probably more my era. Morrissey from the Smiths is coming. I saw the Smiths when I was 16 years old. So
wow.
This is kind of exciting. So anyway, you know, there's just a lot happening. We're actually at our next council meeting doing a report kind of a financial report of how the Magnolia is doing. So encourage people to tune into that.
Good. You've got Haunt Fest on Main coming up. I will say El Cajon does such a great job of all the cities. I will say, I think you do the best job on having great festivals that are free, open to everybody, including a lot of your immigrants, you know, in the community, you know, very welcoming and not hitting up the businesses to pay for all of it. And, you know, like some cities have done.
It's
I would definitely say El Cajon is they're definitely doing some things right. One can always, it's easy to find, you know, the things that maybe go wrong or that one can criticize, but sometimes we forget, you know, to talk about the things that are really good that are happening.
There's a lot of positivity. So we're bullish on El Cajon. It's a great place to be. So encourage people to participate and get involved. We need their help.
Very good. I'm going to let you have the last word. Is there anything else you want folks to know about the city of El Cajon?
One last thing. We have a great mobile phone app. So you can report a myriad of problems. If you see tagging or a homeless encampment, you can report it. So I encourage people that have their mobile phone, just look up their the app store, City of El Cajon, download the app, and it helps us be more responsive to everybody. So we encourage people to participate. Super.
We have been speaking with Graham Mitchell, the city manager for El Cajon. Graham, thanks so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you. Anytime.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine show here on KNSJ. I want to take a moment to thank all of our listeners for tuning in to hear our show, where we report news that matters to people across our region. In an era of cuts to many major media outlets, shrinking local news coverage, and cries of fake news attacking journalists with courage to report the truth, it's important to recognize and support KNSJ Radio. KNSJ gives airtime for original reporting on issues that matter here in San Diego and East County, as well as national news that impacts people here at home. You can donate to help support real news, honest reporting, and inclusion of your community's views and voices at knsj.org. That website again is knsj.org. Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, featuring Halloween events across San Diego's East County throughout the month of October. In downtown El Cajon, the 10th annual Haunt Fest on Main Street will be held October 21st. Haunt Fest features a pumpkin patch, costume contest, kids zone, carnival rides, and live music on multiple stages. There will also be craft and game booths, an LED rock wall, and inflatables. Haunt Fest will also show a surprise feature of Movies in the Park, and there's a car show. For more information, visit hauntfest.org. Spooky Campoween will be held the last 2 weeks in October at Camp Lake Jennings in Lakeside. Camping kids can enjoy trick-or-treating on the campgrounds, a spooky scavenger hunt, campsite decorating, and other creepy crafts. This event is only open for registered campers. You can register and get more details at lakejennings.org. If you're looking for a unique way to celebrate the Halloween season and ride the rails, you can take a ride on the Pumpkin Express hosted by the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association. The haunted train departs from the Campo Depot at several times each weekend with a final destination at the museum grounds, where you could walk through buildings complete with Halloween scenes, a pumpkin patch, and a creepy cast of ghosts and ghouls. Pumpkins are included in purchase for every toddler and child ticket on the Pumpkin Express. Passengers of all ages are encouraged to come in costume. Tickets are available at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum site at psrm.org/pumpkin. The Haunted Amusement Park Scare Trail will be hosted in El Cajon at the old Marshall Scotty's Playland this year. This event was formerly known as Scotty's Scare Trail. There are carnival rides from the 1960s and bumper cars where riders experience out-of-this-world visuals with 3D glasses. You can take a trip at the trail's circus maze, and old attraction graveyard, where you will see broken-down rides, including a Ferris wheel gondola, still waiting for repair from the undead Fix-It crew. Warning, the trail that spans about a mile will also offer a slaughterhouse viewing that's not for the faint at heart. For more info, visit scaretrail.com. Bates Nut Farm and Valley Center has over 50 years of fall celebrations. October attendees can enjoy tractor hay rides, a pumpkin patch, straw bale maze, petting corral, and pony rides. Dogs on a leash are welcome at the farm. You can grab a wheelbarrow and pick from giant and smaller pumpkins such as Big Macs, Ghost Cinderellas, Jack-o'-lanterns, Minis, Squash, Gourds, and other fall decor. There will also be face painting, henna, and live music performances. Find more info at batesnutfarm.biz. Mount Valley Ranch's Pumpkin Patch in Ramona on Highway 78 is open 7 days a week and has a big selection of pumpkins, gourds, and Indian corn. This farm offers a pumpkin patch, corn maze, corn cannon, a petting zoo, spooky decorations, and on Tuesday through Friday afternoons, there are also pony rides. Find more information at mountainvalleyranch.com. Oma's Family Farm Pumpkin Patch in Lakeside requires reservations and ticketing is done online. They have a wide variety of pumpkins to select from, and the pumpkins come in all sizes, from tiny to over 100 pounds. Oma's Family Farm Pumpkin Patch is also offering wagon rides, a cottonseed mountain, a sand pile with toys, playground equipment, petting corral, pedal cart, and tricycle racetrack, and more. For more information, go to omasfamilyfarm.com, where you can also make reservations. And finally, Grossmont Center in La Mesa will be hosting a free safe trick-or-treating option for the kids on October 31st, Halloween night, from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. You can get a complimentary pumpkin bag at the Guest Services Center. The shopping center will be featuring special guest characters, face painting, photos, games, and other activities. This event does require registration, and you can get details at grossmontcenter.com. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions on East County Magazine's Destination East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
On the last day to sign bills this legislative session, Governor Gavin Newsom approved a slew of measures to improve college graduation rates, particularly for students from low-income communities. One proposal, Assembly Bill 1705, requires community colleges to place more students in transfer-level courses. Joshua Hagan with the Campaign for College Opportunity says previously students had to take high-stakes entry exams that diverted too many people, especially students of color, into years of remedial courses that don't count toward a degree.
Whatever classes students took in high school, whatever GPA they had, the best way that we can support them is starting them in something that will earn them college credit, making sure they get supports rather than starting in a remedial class, taking 1, 2, 3 semesters before they even get to that starting line.
Other new laws will expand tutoring services and cancel some student debt for college students who dropped out so they can afford to re-enroll and finish their degrees. Hagan notes another new bill says students won't lose part of their financial aid from the state if they work hard to win a private scholarship.
There was nothing to prevent the state from saying, okay, we will now reduce your state financial aid by $1,000 since you have quote-unquote less need.
Another bill would require Cal State and community colleges to grant priority registration to students who are raising children. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.